Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Workers' Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor, right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher with the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150, and joining me today is Phil Davidson from the Mid-America Regional Council of Carpenters. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Ed. Good to be back.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to have you back. Ken is out on assignment on the East Coast this week, so we're not going to be hearing from Ken, but if you're listening, Ken, just know we're thinking about you.
Sort of.
Yeah, how was your ride in this morning, Phil? We've got some flurries out there. Finally, a little bit of snow, huh?
A little bit. Sunday traffic is ideal.
It really is.
It's nice to wake up in the morning. Birds are chirping. Get on out. No one's impeding your way getting down here. I can be from my house to the city in 20 minutes. Beautiful.
Yeah. Well, since they opened the Circle Interchange back up, it seems like it's always moving faster. But Sundays, especially. I mean, there's no speed limit on 290 for me, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's the Autobahn.
So, but yeah, a little bit of winter weather, which is nice. But I was talking. We were actually filming the show now and putting it on a YouTube page. So one of the gentlemen that does our filming, Louis Alcade, was saying that even though it's winter right now, he's looking out the window at the waves on Lake Michigan. And he's saying it's pretty choppy. So I think that is our pre-spring surf report. So thanks very much for that, Louis. We'll be sure to follow up again next week.
Yeah, we could use a little more sun in these winter months while we're on camera now. Get a little more color on us. It's kind of been brutal. No vitamin D happening.
And that surf report is only found here on 720 WGN. There is no other station where you're going to find that.
No.
So, this morning as I was waking up, I saw a report from the Economic Policy Institute that talked about 2022 saw a 200,000 member increase in unions across the country. So a 200,000 member increase is huge, but it also noted that there were tens of millions that likely wanted to join a union but couldn't. So 2022 was a good year, but as we keep saying, 2023 is the year of the worker. So hopefully those tens of millions that are chomping at the bit, we can get them in the under the tent.
Absolutely. And there's never, I think the public approval of unions is at an all-time high.
It's at the highest that it's been since the mid-1960s. So that's a huge deal. But I know you were telling me, Phil, that you had read something about a state-by-state breakdown on union membership. Some are going up, some are going down.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because there's another report that kind of contradicts the information about union growth that came out from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. It just came out this week saying that on the whole, union membership is down across the country by like 0.2 tenths of a percentage point. And yeah, that's a little bit concerning, but when you look at the, you know, that number as a whole, it really is skewed because it's competing with states that are right to work that have literal, you know, 1% union membership. You're talking about a couple hundred people who are members of unions, which is not a place I want to live.
Right, and for every place in a state where they're organizing, some of those southern states are just rounding up union members and throwing them in a black van, and nobody ever sees them again.
Exactly. Black ops, for sure.
They're not labor-friendly states.
No, but when you look at states like ours, some of the coastal states, some of our strong, you know, states with union presences, there's more in the Midwest as well, you know, you're looking at 20% in some cases. I know in Illinois we're at right around 14%. We have 750,000 union members. So I just, whenever people hear that stat, and it's thrown out there a lot of, oh, union membership is declining, and yet what, it's not what it was in the 70s and the 60s and, you know, the heyday, yeah, even after...
I think we're at about half of what we were in in 1983, which I look at because that was my birth year. So in the last 40 years, it's gone down in half. But I think, you know, what we've been talking about the last few weeks is some momentum and some trends that are going to turn that right around.
Correct.
So was there anything in that report that showed what the weakest union state is in America? I mean, I've got some thoughts. There's a couple of really great candidates, but I'm just curious.
I don't recall what the lowest is. It might have been South Carolina.
I was going to guess South Carolina. For some reason, South Carolina just seems to hate its workforce, you know, and want nothing good for it. So I was going to guess South Carolina. And if I was wrong, then South Carolina and all you listeners in South Carolina, I'm terribly sorry.
We apologize. But yeah, I'm sure it's the Carolinas are pretty low. And then did you know the state with the highest percentage of union membership?
You know, I'm guessing because I've seen stuff like this before, and I always think of New York or California, but it always surprises me that it's, I think it's Hawaii.
Hawaii. Bing, bing, bing.
Man, oh man, would I like to get some work out there.
That would be pretty good.
Yeah. How about it? It seems like a nice place.
We have a pretty active, the Carpenters Union. We've got a pretty active union out there. Those guys are, we've got a lot of members. They have their own council. They're very active politically. Yeah, they're a force to be reckoned with. And I think you combine that with all the tourism workers out there who are unionized. They've got, I think, maybe even over 25% of their workforce is unionized, which is, that's impressive.
Yeah, that's remarkable.
Yeah.
Okay, so for going back to that report that we were talking about where the tens of millions of workers who want to be organized but can't, and there are so many different reasons. We've talked about some on the air, there are always challenges facing workers who want to form a union, organizing is difficult for many, many reasons. First off, organizing is just really hard work. Sitting down and getting workers to, go out on that ledge and leave their job or potentially risk their job if they go out and ask for a union contract, because there are always employers that are lined up to try to retaliate against them, which of course is illegal, but that doesn't mean it isn't happening.
Doesn't mean it's not happening, exactly.
There right now in the news we see a lot of bottom-up organizing, call it. So it's workers at a Starbucks or at a car wash or at a restaurant who just say, hey, we want a union and we're going to make this happen. Just a group of workers trying to start with very little leverage dealing with their managers directly. And then there's also another kind of organizing. So for listeners out there, the main two types of organizing are bottom-up and top-down. So why don't we get a little bit into that, Phil? Because I think it's something that doesn't get talked about very much. But so we have an understanding of what bottom up is. But talk a little bit about top down.
Yeah. And just to add to what you're saying about the bottom up type of organizing, that's what you're seeing right now happening across the country with your Amazons, with your Starbucks, where it's members, it's employees saying like, look, we want to form a union. We're going to have an election. If we have our 50% plus one, we're going to be recognized and form a union, and we're going to take it to our employer. And, then we go to the battle and, try to get recognized there and get certified, and we have our union set. So that's, I think, what people are most familiar with. And we'll get into some of the pitfalls with that type of organizing. The other type is from the top down, which in the building trades is, I would say, pretty common.
Right.
And that's where you just go directly to the employer and you have negotiations directly with the employer and, make the pitch of how they will be more successful, more profitable by being a union contractor and all the opportunities that are presented for them. And then that way, when the employer is organized, then, everyone who works for them is organized too. So you're not trying to go one member at a time, one employee at a time.
Right.
You're just organizing the entire company.
Well, it makes sense in that industry because you can take a let's say a carpentry shop, and you can say, here are 1,000 other businesses that do the same thing that yours does that are just like yours, and they're successful. So it's easier to make maybe a good business case with apples-to-apples comparisons of business in the construction industry maybe than it is to, organize an auto repair shop or, a Starbucks or something like that.
Correct. And we have a good example of that recently in the Carpenters Union that began as a bottom-up traditional organizing campaign and then became a top-down out in our St. Louis region where we represent carpenters out there. We had a job where we found some non-union guys who were from Tennessee on a job. Our organizers went and talked to them about what they're missing out by not being a member of the Carpenters Union, the better pay, the better benefits, the whole nine yards. And then this non-union employee said, we do a lot of work for back in Nashville, I think they were from. And I've got a lot of guys out there and work is starting to dry up. We could potentially get more people to join the union. So our organizers went out to Nashville, talked to this contractor who said work is starting to dry up. Obviously Nashville was a really, really hot market for a while.
Absolutely.
But I think things have slowed down, and he says, I'm interested in joining. So he actually pulled up stakes, moved his company to St. Louis, and now we have 50 union carpenters working for him. He's a union contractor now, signed agreement now. We'll see how things go. It's early in the process, but I think that's a perfect example of how, one guy you have a conversation with can eventually say, hey, this is a good deal. He tells his, coworkers of the grass is a lot greener on the union side, guys.
Right.
And then next thing we've got a real opportunity. you know, his boss is going to make a lot more money being a union contractor. The work is work output is obviously going to be far superior. So, yeah, we're pretty excited about that.
Well, it's a really good point that you make, because not only is union membership good for workers, but also, especially in the construction industry, where you can take something like training and invest in it as a union to make your employers more skilled, more capable, and make them able to promise a better work product than non-union counterparts. So that's a case where working as partners on things like training programs, you know, you can give success through the union to the contractors too, where being a union contractor is a good thing. It's something that that contractors want to be. And I mean, then with the operating engineers, we've seen a lot more of that as well. You know, training is the most important thing we do. So, well, that's interesting. So we've got to take a break. After this, we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in Congress right now. We saw the debt ceiling touched on Thursday, I think it was, but there's going to be a big fight over Social Security and Medicare and some of these so-called entitlement programs. So when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about that. So stick with us. We'll be right back with more Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial.
Mike, right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher, and with me is Phil Davidson.
Hey, hello, everybody. Good to be back.
So, yeah, in the last segment, we were talking a little bit about organizing, and off the air, Phil, you had said something about bottom-up organizing and why it's so challenging.
Yeah. In our last segment, we mentioned, you know, the difference between the top-down organizing, the bottom-up organizing, and we're seeing, you know, this wave of interest sweeping across the country, more employees saying, hey, I'm fed up with my working conditions, I'm fed up with my low pay, we want to form a union. That's great. The problem is the deck is really stacked against unions when it comes to actually organizing people and having them recognized by their employer. I think I read a number, again, from the Bureau of Labor Stats, of the one quarter of workers who vote to form a union, more than one quarter of them will have no contract within 3 years of that election. So The election's done, but they still have no action. They're still not recognized as a bargaining body. They're still essentially, you know, a non-union employee, even though they voted to become a union. And so that's why, as we mentioned before, a lot of this goes to the top-down type organizing, where it's more effective. You can get it done in a much more expedient way
if you have some buy-in from the folks who run the companies.
Correct. And then, you know, one way to fix this, and I know we've talked about this on the show before, is this PRO Act, which is legislation that was passed in the House last year, got stalled in the Senate. You know, there's really not much hope for it passing in this current Congress.
Certainly not.
But what this, you know, some of the tenets of this legislation, you know, what it would do is it would create set timelines for when an election is done and when the results are in, and how much time a employer would have to meet for contract negotiations with this new body.
With Travis last week, Travis Ketterman was on, and Ken Edwards has talked about it as well at length, is interest arbitration. Just saying, okay, you have a union. The policy of the United States is to try to promote collective bargaining. It's in nobody's interest to drag this out and have these workers struggle. They want a union. Let's make this happen. So to create, you know, a 1 year window for that first contract through or threaten it with, not threaten it, but with put some teeth into it.
Exactly.
With interest arbitration.
Right.
If you guys can't figure this out, we will come in and we will look at the unsettled issues and we will make a decision. And I think companies are pretty hesitant to say, okay, well, we'll let let the government decide what we're going to pay and what benefits we're going to offer. So in the public sector, where interest arbitration is a thing and has been for decades, I think, contracts move a lot more
quickly. They move quickly. Yeah, right. And, you know, the current penalty system is non-existent. I mean, it's a slap on the wrist if your employees organize and you don't recognize them. It's, you know, you can get, you're talking like a couple $1,000 fine.
Right.
And now they're talking about having actual stiff penalties, you know, $100,000 per instance, where it would catch more attention and companies would think twice about stalling before they have these contract negotiations.
Yeah, I mean, we have a system of laws and regulations to protect workers, but it is very frustrating because it's very often overlooked. There are a lot of loopholes, and getting remedies when employers break the law can sometimes take months or years.
Years.
You know, that's one reason that we've got to try to push things like the PRO Act, or in cases where you have divided government like now, or just go to the state level where you can try to push more worker-friendly policies. But speaking of, uninspiring government, this week on Thursday, a lot of you will have known that we officially hit the debt ceiling, and that's the amount of money that the country can borrow to pay off obligations that Congress has already approved. So the Treasury Department can make some, some math gimmicks or play with numbers a little bit to keep us rolling for a while. But this is a pretty serious problem that threatens, you know, an already pretty fragile stock market and an economy that we're just trying to get back from you know, some pretty nasty inflation and some extremely rocky several months.
Right. It always seems to rear its head during times of divided government as well.
For sure. So, yeah, I mean, because it's leverage.
Right.
You know, this is something that used to just be a routine thing, but now it's leverage. And what does it mean to everyone out there listening right now? You hear debt ceiling, you know, how does that affect you in your ordinary life? Well, one side in the House has decided not to raise the debt ceiling to basically hold the economy hostage. Unless there are givebacks on entitlement programs, which is a terrible name for Social Security and Medicare. Those things shouldn't be called entitlements because with every paycheck you earn through your entire career, you pay into that. You know, Social Security is retirement savings, but
yeah.
You've got a whole faction within Congress that is trying to hold the economy hostage in order to push out the Social Security retirement date or lower the minimum monthly benefits or things like that are all bad for workers, because the whole idea here is, the government doesn't have enough money coming in. I mean, we forget that a tax reform bill passed in like 2016 or 2017 that cost the government $20 trillion in revenue over the next 10 years. But money...
But the rich got richer.
That's right. I mean, the benefits of that, my taxes didn't change from that. But I know a lot of corporations saved a lot of money. And there are people out there that are not members of these corporations, or, you know, shareholders or management, who are saying, well, we've got to protect job creators. But the problem with that is, as we see once again, if you take away revenue from the government, at some point somebody's going to come back and say, we don't have enough money, we've got to cut something. And that thing always seems to be Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And those are safety nets that keep people off the streets and keep people healthy.
Wildly popular.
Extremely popular. I mean,
life-sustaining benefits.
Yeah, we all know someone who's retired. And, you know, as we've talked about, there's only a small portion of the population that has the benefit of a pension or, you know, good, solid retiree health care. So we all know people that rely on Social Security. You know, it's everybody counts on Social Security when they retire, and Medicare for health care, and Medicaid for folks that are less fortunate. I mean, these are just safety net issues, you know, for a modern society, but they're once again being threatened, and a gun is being put to the head of the entire national economy.
World economy.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Really, it is.
It's
a dangerous game of chicken. I mean, ultimately, you know that side is going to fold, because who wants to be the person to say, yeah, sorry, I just can't deal with this national debt continuing to rise. I'm going to have to cut your Social Security. You know, like, no one's going to go up to a retiree and say that to their face.
It's losing politics, but exactly. I wish everybody would recognize that now rather than drag it out for a few weeks, let the economy stumble, let the stock market decline, and then we get to where we should be.
Yeah, all the alarms are sounding about the rising national debt, and, you know, we're going to be okay.
But we've got to take a quick break, but after the break, we're going to have Megan Financial and Ron Whittingham in the studio, and we can talk a little bit about what this means for folks who are concerned about the impact on their retirement. So stick with us. We'll be back in a few minutes right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Worker's Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Worker's Mic, powered by the MCL, right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher. Sitting with me is Phil Davidson, and we've got two guests with us today. Michelle Ross, she is the Pension and Benefit Services Coordinator from Megan Financial, along with Ron Whittingham, the CEO of Megan Financial. So good morning, Michelle. Nice to see you.
Hi, good morning. Glad to be here.
So good to have you in. And as always, Ron, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks, Ed. Glad to be here, too. Thanks.
So, Michelle, first, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do at Megan?
Well, I work in the pension department, and I help facilitate all the pension applications pretty much through any walk of life of a journeyman's work. So what I do is I work with, like, apprentices and get them going. I can do beneficiary forms, change of address.
So things that are very complicated and kind of intimidating for workers, you make that process easy for them.
Yes. I'm doing the paperwork all day long, so it's easy for me to do. And I just love helping people get to their retirement goals.
I can only imagine that you see people with smiles on their faces when they realize that things are maybe better than they expected they would be, or the whole process is a little bit easier. And
absolutely, yeah. I try to get all the paperwork ready for them. I have checklists and everything like that of all the documents they need and get them going as fast as I can.
Oh, that's great.
I was going to ask, Ed, how steep is that learning curve for these guys when they come in? Is there some better than others, or is it a lot of hand-holding? Because, yeah, you can give me some real technical information.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a little bit of everything. Some people really understand their pension plans, but there's a lot of people out there that are just lost, and they might not even know that they have a pension that they're entitled to. So I try to help them find that out and get them applied for it as fast as we can.
You know, too, one thing, too, is, you know, Michelle kind of, she you know, makes everything happen. So she, you know, I make promises and she keeps them.
She keeps them.
So, you know, I'm like, oh yeah, everything is good. Everything is done. And, you know, I'm looking at her, I'm like, everything's good, right?
It sounds like you should ask for a raise, Michelle.
Oh, you know, I'm just happy to do this. You know, I mean, I get guys sometimes that'll come in and say, hey, I want to retire on Monday. And I'm like, all right, let's get it going.
And you can actually make that happen.
I can make it happen. I mean, it's a little, you know, you know, nail biting here and there, but if they got the ID documents that they need and the paperwork signed, we can make it happen.
I wonder what happens to someone at work when they say, I'm going to retire on Monday.
Oh, you know.
Must have been a bad day.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, as you were saying, there are some people who might not even know that they have a pension or might not know anything about the system. And that's something we've talked about a little bit when you've been on the air before from Megan, about how because unions provide these things and set it all up and you just go to work and the money is saved for you, you know, it's very often that people don't know the extent of the benefits they have. And, you know, I've known a couple of folks who, you know, who've worked with Ron and who've worked with Megan who were trying to figure out what their retirement was going to look like or what their time frame was or how many more years they would have to work, only to find out that things were better than they expected and they could actually retire sooner. So, you know, I've got many years to go yet, but I hope to one day be in that position where it's like, I hope I can retire only to find out that I'm, you know, in a better spot. So that's a beautiful thing. And, you know, a luxury that, that many, many workers don't have, but should have. I mean, this is a simple thing. We work our tails off for our whole lives. And, you know, we should be able to retire with a little bit of comfort, a little bit of dignity.
Absolutely. And I'm here to help.
One thing I would add too is, you know, if you're not familiar with the whole process of retirement, which nobody is because you do it once.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we help these people, you know, through the whole process. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're not familiar with something, you really just kind of just set it aside. But this is something that you have to act on because there's an end date, right? You know, there's a goal that you want to retire at 62. Mm-hmm. You know, I was sitting with the union, the painters administrator, the other day on Wednesday, and she just shared with me their application. I mean, it's 36 pages long.
You're kidding me.
I mean, I don't know what they can ask in 36 pages, but it's daunting. Yeah. So to have a resource to help that is a huge deal. Now, mostly the administrators will sit with you and kind of, you know, tell you what to do, make sure you're making the right decisions, but they can't advise you on those decisions.
Yeah.
They can't advise you on the taxability. And, you
that's
know,
where you come in.
That's where we come in.
Well, 36 pages would make me reconsider retiring. I'd be like, you know what? I'm just going to keep working. I can't do this.
I mean,
and
forms for something like that, there's got to be in 36 pages, there must be 100 questions where you're like, I don't know if I'm answering this properly.
Oh,
I mean,
on
anything that you do, when you're in that position where you don't know if you're doing something correctly and you don't have somebody beside you to answer or to help you do it, I mean, that creates a lot of anxiety. So,
well, and one other thing is once you make these decisions, there's no changing them.
Right.
You know, you make a spousal benefit decision, it's irrevocable. So you better make the right decision.
Yes.
Yeah, spouses out there who are listening, you better be nice.
Yes,
you know?
Move things over real quick.
And you know, one thing, too, I would add, too, is, you know, Michelle mentioned the beneficiary cards. And what we see a lot is, you know, these unions have all these benefits, right? They have a local insurance plan, a national insurance plan. They have an annuity. And, you know, somebody gets divorced, somebody, you know, passes away. You know, they go into the union administrator's office, change a beneficiary. Happens to be they change one beneficiary, and then not the other one. So something happens. I mean, we see unions paying, you know, ex-spouses all the time.
Right. Instead of current spouses. I mean, we do the same thing. We tell our members, figure out who your beneficiaries are and make sure that that's.
Or they got in the trade early and their mom is the beneficiary, and, you know, that doesn't work out typically. So, you know, you just have to jump through hoops to try to change it.
What happens if you don't change the beneficiary? Does that go to like probate or something like that if you pass? Or?
Yeah, it would end up in that person's estate. And then if that estate's large enough, you have to go through probate. And
it sounds like a really fun process.
Yeah, no. I don't know, thankfully, but right. I don't want to try that one out either. Sounds maybe worse than that retirement application.
So before the break, we were talking a little bit about how Social Security is being used kind of as a bargaining chip on this whole debt ceiling negotiation. You know, the debt ceiling conversation is so esoteric that many of us don't really know what to make of it or how it really impacts us. But in this case, it's just it's kind of a standoff, and the bargaining chip is reducing Social Security, weakening Medicare. You know, these are benefits that retirees count on. And for workers who have pensions, I mean, as a union that runs a pension fund, seeing the economy threatened and potentially taking another hit after a rocky year, I mean, that affects the balance of the pension fund itself and the health of the fund.
Yep.
But the benefits that our members receive are not impacted by that. Now, for listeners out there that are sitting here thinking, you know, what's going to happen with the economy if this showdown continues? Is this going to hurt my 401k? Is this going to hurt my retirement savings? I mean, what's your take as an expert on retirement savings, seeing just nonsense like this happening in Washington?
Yeah, you know, and there's a lot of nonsense. I mean, it's, you know, there's just so much gridlock. And it's a shame, and especially there's so much gridlock right now that, you know, we've been through this debt ceiling debate before, and we've gotten past it. And the scary part now is that they can't agree on anything. Even the parties themselves can't agree on anything, as we've seen.
That's true.
So there's two impacts, I think, that, you know, to union participants or people that have defined benefit plans. I mean, the first thing is to feel good about is these union, you know, retirees all have defined benefit plans, regardless of what's happening with the market. That pension check is being direct deposited into your bank each and every month, so you have guaranteed money to ride the storm out, right?
Yeah.
You do obviously have your defined contribution or 401k plan. I mean, that's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And in these days, to be honest with you, after this past year, you know, we're more of a psychologist than a financial advisor.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Talking, you know, people off the edge. But, you know, you have to look at things, though, is that the markets, you know, don't go up every year. They did for the three prior years.
Yeah.
So the markets have to correct. And, you know, this past year, the markets corrected, in my opinion, more than we even targeted. But that's what they do.
Right.
Now, one thing I can add, and I'm trying to, you know, put a lot of our clients at ease because they're all getting their statements right now. And then we have all this news and, you know, talking heads talking about the debt ceiling and the impact it's going to have on the market. Everybody's talking about it's going to crash. You know, and it may correct, and it's going to be choppy for sure. But in the history of the market, going back to the Great Depression, the market's only had 7 instances where the market's been negative 2 years in a row.
Yeah, yeah, I can definitely understand that.
And that's, you know, that's Great Depression. That's, you know, World Wars. Mm-hmm. That's dot-com crash, 9/11, 2008 Great Recession.
Yeah, 100 years, yeah.
And in my opinion, I mean, it's my opinion, you know, the economy, where we're at right now, isn't one of those situations. So I think the market's going to be choppy because we have all this going on.
Right.
The war in Ukraine, inflation, you know, when is the Fed going to stop raising rates? I mean, all these unknowns. And that's the one thing the market doesn't like is uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of it right now.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, to your point, usually if the market goes down, it comes back up. If you have a bad year, you have a recovery year shortly after.
It always does. And luckily for a lot of our union clients, they have the money coming to their bank accounts every month. They're not as reliant as the regular public on their 401k balances.
Right.
So they can ride the storm out. And the markets will go up again.
Well, hopefully it won't last too long. And Michelle, you won't have to get a degree in psychology to be prepared to have these conversations.
Thank goodness.
So, Phil, you and I were talking and off the air about sports, actually, of all things.
But now the NFL playoffs are here. Yep.
Yeah, the NFL playoffs have been crazy. But I think you wanted to, you know, you had a question to pose to our guests.
Yeah. So this was something that came up after a few beers with some friends watching the first round of the playoffs the other day. What, if you had to pick one sport of the major, we'll say the major four, I know there's other sports that people follow as well, but of football, basketball, baseball, hockey, what is your favorite playoffs if you had to pick one?
you know, for me, NFL. You know, but I am a diehard Bears fan, and it's been a lot of years since the double doink. The double doink, you know, still still wake up with that one. But I, NFL for me for sure.
Oh, and this is a perfect time for you then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you, Michelle?
NFL for sure. I'm a huge Bears fan. Always have been.
Nice. Yeah.
Even though they make me cry.
You've been spoiled this year, because this year's, we were talking earlier, like this year's NFL playoffs so far, there's been some unbelievable games. You know, historic comeback from Jacksonville. So yeah, it's been fun to watch.
Yeah, for sure.
I'd be a fan of seeing the Bears in the playoffs, but I think regardless,
don't hold your breath. Yeah.
If the Bears go to the playoffs, I'm not missing a moment of it. But hockey playoffs, I've never really found another sport where I just can't move. I mean, there's not a moment to take your eyes off the screen. And back when the Blackhawks were in their runs and going into Game Sixes and Game Sevens in the finals, I mean, I would sit there and watch these games and think, I'm going to die younger than I would have had I not watched this game. Like, these games are taking years off my life with the stress of it. But I love NHL playoffs, so I'm going NHL.
NHL is great. I think I got to go baseball for myself. It's a very difficult choice here, but I just feel like October baseball, because baseball, as we know, is a slow, boring game, and it's the reason why it's dying. But when it comes to playoffs, I mean, there's just, you know, every single pitch counts in a 9-inning game, and, you know, the difference between a 2-0 count versus 3-1 count, and there's just, you can just feel the tension in the air, and I love that about it. And like I said, I love every other sport playoffs as well, but I gotta go baseball.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, good question, Phil.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, well, before we have to break for some commercials, Ron, why don't you tell us a little bit more about where we can find more information about Megan?
Yeah, sure. Call us, you know, if you want a pension, you want to go over your pension review, 708-444-1090, or you can visit us on the web, www.megent.com.
And can you give that phone number one more time?
Sure, 708-444-1090.
All right. Well, great. Well, Ron and Michelle, thank you both so much for coming in today. It was great to have you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ed.
And we'll see you guys soon. And listeners, stay with us. We'll be back in just a few minutes with more Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
Ron Whittingham, Investment Executive, 15321 South 94th Avenue, Suite 100, Orland Park, Illinois, 60462, 708-444-1090. Securities and advisory services offered through Cetera Advisors, LLC, member FINRA SIPC, a broker-dealer and a registered investment advisor. Cetera is under separate ownership from any other named entity. The views depicted on this broadcast are general in nature and are provided for informational use only. The views are not necessarily those of Cetera Advisors, LLC. They should not be considered as specific investment or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. Keep in mind that investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Investment decisions should be based on individuals' own goals, time horizon, and tolerance for risk. Consult your investment and/or tax professional regarding your unique situation.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Workers' Mic, powered by MCL, right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher. We're here with Phil Davidson. And we're getting into our last segment of the show, and I wanted to bring up a study that just came out this week. It was from the Illinois Economic Policy Institute, and something that we have discussed in varying degrees of depth over the past couple of months is prevailing wage laws. Now, prevailing wage laws are in the construction industry. It's basically a minimum wage for construction. And, I mean, Illinois, we are lucky to have a very, very strong prevailing wage law. And the idea of it is that the biggest spenders on construction are state government. Things like, you know, the Department of Transportation building roads and bridges or the tollway or things like that that are spending billions of dollars and ensuring that the state can't undercut local wage standards. So they set a floor, a minimum wage for construction. So
And it takes into account a fair cost of living,
right.
You know, fair benefits. It's not pulling numbers out of thin air. It's saying, you know, this is what a person who lives in this region should reasonably, you know, be paid and, you know, in both paycheck and benefits.
Yeah. And the whole idea is basically to discourage workers from other states or contractors from bringing workers in from other states to do the job for less money so that they can bring back this money to their states and the people within within Illinois would have to sit back and watch this all happen.
Yeah. That is so critical. I think we often hear about jobs being outsourced to other countries, but don't forget about jobs being outsourced to other states.
For sure.
We don't want people, you know, in the state of Illinois coming up from Arkansas at a much lower rate and then not paying, you know, sales taxes, income taxes here. I mean, think how much money we lose by that.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you can't turn a blind eye to that. Like, your local workforces should be the ones working on projects.
And we've talked at length about a project over in Indiana. It's the America's largest solar farm, the Mammoth Solar.
That's right.
And they're bringing, I think, 80% of their workforce is from outside of Indiana. And they gave up tax incentives to bring the project there. And the locals are very, very upset. But what this Illinois Economic Policy Institute study found was that in Indiana, West Virginia, and Kentucky, which is these are three states where these prevailing wage laws were repealed back in kind of the red wave of the early 2010s, that over 5 years of their repeal, construction wages stayed almost the same, went down a little bit. So the average construction wages in 2011 were $23.94 an hour. And then in 2017, it was down to $23.77. So lost an average of about 20 cents an hour over 6 years. But other states during that period of time had 12% growth. So it's just another study that shows that repealing these prevailing wage laws and damaging wage laws in general is bad for workers, takes down their earnings, and you know, as we've said so many times on the show, what's bad for workers and what's bad for workers' paychecks is bad for the economy at large.
Absolutely. They're making, what, less than half of what workers in free bargaining states make?
That's right.
Especially here? I mean, it's...
Yeah, Illinois, we're lucky to have a strong prevailing wage law and, you know, a government that understands that workers are part of the solution when it comes to economic issues.
Yeah.
So another state...
And no wonder why they're having such difficulties recruiting.
Right.
You know?
So we'd like to close with one thing. Tonight, the Blackhawks, they are having union night at the United Center. Is that right, Phil?
That is right. Yeah, we were talking about playoffs and what sports are our favorite in the previous segment. I don't think there's any real hope for the Blackhawks making the playoffs. They actually might be mathematically eliminated already. But
yeah, I'm not sure, but probably. That
but we still
right.
love the Blackhawks. We had a good run, you know, in the previous decade. But yeah, tonight is a big event. It's going to be really cool. It's union night. They have invited all the building trades. I think unions, actually, all labor organizations can participate. And if you go onto the Blackhawks website, we'll talk about it at the end, there's a link for discounted tickets. And the all members who get this ticket are going to get a free union-made Blackhawks hat, which is outstanding. There's not enough, you know, union-made apparel circulating, and we love seeing that. And it'll be a lot of fun. It'll be a good, you know, just networking event. I know our members in the Carpenters Union are really excited about it. I mean, it was one of the most popular posts we had on our social media over the last couple months.
Well, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, just what a great event.
What does it cost to take your kids out to a game and, you know, get hot dogs and get drinks and
cost
park your
mortgage,
car?
Yeah.
Right, so opportunities like this where you can just go and get a discounted ticket, and these tickets are, they have them in all the sections of the stadium, but you get some serious, serious discounts. So.
Yeah, and it'll be a huge turnout, I think, like I said before. I'm sure we'll have at least a couple hundred Carpenters there, you know, just based on the interest and the amount of questions that we've received.
For sure.
I know the operators will be out there in full force. You know, so yeah, we'll have strength in numbers.
We're going to need it. We got to cheer on those players and hopefully give them a little bit of extra motivation to get out there and score some goals. Just because the playoffs aren't in the picture doesn't mean that they can't get out there and dazzle a little bit, right?
No, yeah, and the Hawks are the best. Yeah, and it's not too late to get a ticket.
Yeah, so. It looks like the easiest way to do it. Again, the game's tonight, but the easiest way to get a ticket for that is honestly just to Google Chicago Blackhawks Union Night, or you can go to the Chicago Blackhawks website, look up ticket offers, and you'll see Union Night on there. So if you're looking for something fun to do tonight, that's a pretty good option. So check it out.
And go get your free hat.
Yeah, get your free hat, and you can wear it tomorrow to work. Thank you very much, Phil. Always
Thank
a pleasure
you.
To have you.
Thanks,
Hopefully
Ed.
See you back here again soon. Not wishing that Ken won't be here, but...
No, we would never.
No. Hope you're still listening, Ken. But tune in next week. We'll see you again right here on The Worker's Mic on 720 WGN.
The preceding episode of The Worker's Mic was powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial. For additional information and podcasts of The Worker's Mic, visit WGNradio.com.